Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Keith Bishop, author of Slop, The Wild Boar Nation, and you're listening to Carson's Corner, talk radio seeking solutions for today's and tomorrow's challenges.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013, and you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vultures Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Hi, this is David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Jay Ray and Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio and also at SYMradio.com/live.
Welcome live to Carson's Corner, folks. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you this Sunday evening, and we're also broadcasting in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. Great independent, non-corporate, progressive media content at the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. And also, they have a group on Facebook, which has been a little bit more active as of late. You can follow them or join the group on Facebook at the Commons Project Network as well. Very, very important stuff. Big thanks to the folks over there for supporting this show. And you know what's funny, folks? By the way, 347-326-9749 if you want to call in and be a part of the program. We also have the chat room open for you. You know what's funny is my good friend Brad Hullhut, who is a left-wing libertarian, okay? He rejects government, rejects all forms of power, and him and I may not agree on everything, but we agree on many a core central issues, like the need to raise class consciousness, the inherent problems with capitalism, with our system of banking in America. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. He posted something on Facebook, and I got to share this. This is absolutely hilarious. It's a picture of a back of a pickup truck that reads, "What if right-wing bumper stickers told the truth?" And the stickers on the back of the truck read, "Save our billionaires, spare the fetus, starve the child, corporations are people too, tax the poor." That's great. I mean, that's pretty much what you have right now within the Republican Party. And I don't even think that at this point people would be ashamed to display such stickers, because it's really evolved into a cult-like spectacle at this point, where there is great antipathy for the poor. You know, we see this on a daily basis on Fox News and right-wing talk radio, comparing the poor to debris, saying that the poor should go dumpster diving. And this really reflects the mindset of the elites in America, because it has been decided in the business community that government spending has to be reduced when it comes to things like unemployment, when it comes to things like welfare and other forms of government spending that go to non-rich people. Okay? And that's, you know, really what we're seeing right now. This is where the debate is focusing on, because as far as they're concerned, there is no other area in the federal budget that needs to be cut. It's not spending unless it's going to somebody else. It's not spending unless it's going to another congressional district or another part of our society in which you don't like, or a minority person, or fill in the blank. You know, meanwhile, the $1 trillion in tax expenditures that we give out to the very wealthy each year, the fact that corporations are paying next to nothing in taxes, the lowest effective tax rate in more than 50 years, corporate taxes are now half of what they used to be during the 1960s, that is not up for debate. That is for scrutiny. We have to really punish those that are on unemployment and those that are on welfare. And, you know, we saw it last week with the war on poverty. By the way, we're going to get into the Christie scandal, because I think that is very, very important. You know me, I don't like to discuss, you know, topical issues. I like to really focus on core issues and try to have some sort of institutional analysis of many different things. But, you know, we saw last week with the war on poverty how it was portrayed as some sort of failure, some sort of, you know, this is where what's driving our country down. People are just not productive. People are lazy. The same old song and dance from the elites out there. Okay, but in actuality, we have a war on the poor in America. We have a war on working people like you and I. And it's about time we start to, you know, gather together to try to really organize around the money that is organized around us. It is really amazing that this is where we're at right now in America. It's really a bad time to be an American. There's really just no question about that. I mean, you know, you could just look at statistic after statistic. You could look at the economy. You could look at the amount of debt that Americans are accumulating as a result of stagnated wages. You could look at the corporate profits. You could look at the profits going to a small section of the people out there, less than 1%. You know, we always like to talk about the 1%, those that have received all of the tax breaks, those that have received all of the income growth, and so on. But really, it's the top that are, as Les Leopold said in the intro, making $1 million an hour. And what that means is that money is coming from us. That money is being siphoned from our pocket. Now, how is that? How is it that money is coming from us? Well, I'm sure if you're a wage earner, like most Americans are, and obviously your interests are not reflected in the corporate media, your interests count for nothing. You're just an input into the production process. You're working two or three jobs to make a living. You're doing more and more work at your place of employment. You see, as a laborer, your responsibility never ends to your master, which is your employer. Your responsibility never ends. Your workload never ends. Whatever they want to pile on to you, they can. Whatever they want to do to you, they can. Want to switch you, transfer you to a department, want to move you to a different shift, want to lay you off, want to force you to do the work of two or three different people. It's all legal. In fact, they can even close down the store. They can even force you to move. Anything they want, these bastards can do to you because our laws are written by them and to protect their interests and to contain labor in America, which is why we have a system of labor control in America, as Joe Burns points out very eloquently in his book, Reviving the Strike. We have a system of labor control where the mobility of capital is first and foremost. That's it. And the mobility of workers is non-existent. And so all of this is taking place, and guess who's benefiting? Guess who's making money? All you have to do in a given society is to look at who's getting rich and who's not to figure out what is going on. If you listen to the elitist rhetoric out there, you would believe that the problem with America is that we're just not working hard enough. We are just lazy. You know, we're a welfare nation, right? The government is far too generous. But in actuality, if you're smart and you really research these claims, you realize that that's what they are, just claims, that it's not true. That the average American is working past 40 hours, has fewer vacation time than workers in China. We're killing ourselves because wages are not going up. The cost of living is going up. And yet this is our survival mechanism, is to work beyond belief. This is what we do when we have to rent ourselves out for survival, which the capitalist system requires. Requires us to rent ourselves out for survival. And while we're doing this, again, the elitists out there, the corporations, the very wealthy, are making tons of money essentially off of our backs. And that has continued. And that's why a little later on in the program, I want to get to President Obama and the Democrats focusing on income equality and focusing on raising the minimum wage, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this is, you know, as one Clinton advisor said, Obama playing the violin, you know, with de-sounding progressive rhetoric and then governing just as business-oriented as anybody under these set of circumstances. It's really laughable. They're talking about income inequality and talking about raising the minimum wage while he's trying to fast-track this free trade agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which really tells you about the Obama agenda. And all you got to do is look at the deeds. Don't listen to the words. It's very, very important. We're going to get into that later. But you've got the Governor Christie scandal, which I think is very important because, as you know, I am a New Jersey resident, okay? I've lived in New Jersey pretty much all of my life, okay? I like New Jersey. I really do. I moved out to California a few years ago, and it was very difficult to find employment there, and there was a lot of problems there. And I came back home, and I don't think I'm going to move anywhere else in my lifetime. I really don't anticipate me doing that. And, you know, the state obviously has had a history of corruption with corrupt governors. It is a densely populated state. And this is really no surprise that we have essentially a corrupt administration in a state house. What I've been telling people and what other people have been screaming about for years, people like Steve Walmer of the NJEA, who we've had on the show, people like Barbara Kasichian, I believe she may be the current, if not she was the former president of the NJEA. They've been on this program before. They've been telling us that Governor Christie has been like this, you know, his whole career. this guy as a attorney general prosecuted only Democrats. Okay, and you know, this is a guy, all you got to do is listen to a Christie press conference to hear him say, shut up, you're an idiot, insult people, just bullying juvenile behavior. And let me ask you, what other governor does this? What other politician does this? I mean, who else can get away with what Governor Christie has gotten away with? And we're not even looking at his abysmal economic record. We're not even looking at, you know, his policies. We're just looking at his behavior. You know, insulting a Democratic lawmaker, threatening to, made a comment about a baseball bat, insulting a Navy SEAL. I mean, just it just goes on and on and on. There's no accountability. There's no scrutiny because the establishment loves Governor Christie. Governor Christie, New Jersey, has his own radio station in New Jersey, 101.5. They are practically part of the Christie communication team. It's absolutely disgusting. It is. He has Fox News behind him. Fox News loves him because he's obnoxious and he's an unapologetic right-wing individual. Don't let the media fool you when they claim that Governor Christie is some sort of moderate. He's not. This is a man who's been outside of the state of New Jersey meeting with special interests for years now. This is a man who was actually approached by Roger Ailes, the chief propagandist at Fox News, in an effort to try to get him to run to 2012. The establishment loves Governor Christie. They absolutely love him because he can do their bidding, push their agenda. On the core issues, he's right in line with the business interests of America. And therefore, there's really nothing that's going to be able to shake him. And so this scandal, this revelation of the conduct within this man's administration, having his top aide, Bridget Kelly, who was with him for 5 years, talk about shutting down a bridge and then laughing about the aftermath, the effects that a bridge closure would have on people. It's just sadistic. It really is, and it's a tremendous abuse of power. The only question remains is whether or not Governor Christie knew about this. And I got to tell you, I mean, you know, there are some reports out there, if you want to believe in the corporate media, that say that, you know, he's going to be unscathed. They're not going to find out anything, even though there's an investigation taking place right now. I just find it hard to believe that Governor Christie didn't know about what was happening. You know, because why would he accept the resignation of two officials at the Port Authority without inquiring why, without talking to them? Why would he ask Governor Cuomo of New York to back off of an investigation if he didn't know what was going on? Why would he not talk to Bridget Kelly about, you know, this email that she sent? And furthermore, you know, another thing that the corporate media just let off the hook, didn't even examine, was the fact Christie fired her for lying, not for retribution. I listened to much of that press conference that I did. What is it, 100 or 111 minutes or an hour and 48 minutes or something ridiculous like that. And I didn't hear any remorse whatsoever about the actions of his administration. He didn't care about the political retribution, the using of a bridge, which terrorists shut down bridges. You know, he didn't seem to care at all about that. The only emotion he displayed was towards his aides and how they, according to him, lied to him, you know? And so that really just, you know, it proves to me and it proves to anybody out there that's paying attention that this guy is a political thug. And you can look at the stories involving former Governor Richard Cody and how after he had problems with Governor Christie, police state troopers did not guard him. You can look at other stories where mayors that refused to endorse Governor Christie had funding cut from them that was supposed to go towards Hurricane Sandy relief. And you could clearly see a pattern of political retribution on the part of Governor Christie. But I emphasize it does not make a difference because the establishment, the elites like him. And it's not a party thing. I mean, you know, if you're listening out there and you're under the impression that I'm suggesting that this is only relegated to the Republican Party, you're absolutely wrong. This could have been either party. You know, I don't think the Democrats would be as explicit when it comes to enacting political retribution. I mean, we've seen on Fox News and right-wing talk radio the effort to try to draw some sort of equivalency between what happened with Governor Christie and Benghazi and the IRS, these buzzwords that right-wingers throw out there to try to suggest that there's some sort of scandal within the Obama administration. But it's just that. It's a false equivalency because this is directly from Christie's aide. This is directly from the Christie administration who works, you know, this lady worked very very closely to Governor Christie. And with the IRS, you know, scandal, if you want to call it that, these were, you know, low-level IRS employees. I believe one of them was a Republican that targeted not necessarily Tea Party groups, but targeted progressive groups as well. A much different situation emanating out of Ohio, where, you know, this political scandal was at the core of the Christie administration. And so, you know, I mean, don't get sidetracked by that because that's just ridiculous. That's just the right-wing media trying to distract from, you know, their man, Governor Christie. And we all know that Fox News is in a tank for Governor Christie. And so, but this is not, you know, this is a reflection of our corrupt political system in America, where everything now is highly polarized. And part of the reason why is because of income and wealth consolidation. You will see that as long as capital is at a war with labor, and as long as capital is controlling labor, we're going to be a very, very divided country. It wasn't always like that, though. I mean, you know, you saw this during the 20s. I'm reading Tom Hartman's book, The Crash of 2016. And after the American people understood what happened during the so-called Roaring 20s, they understood who the economic royalists were. They understood that, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's message of basically welcoming their hate, attacking them, and taking them head on and establishing government-run programs, successful government-run programs like the WPA, CCC, and other programs was a way to make the government the employer of last resort and revive the economy. And then Governor Roosevelt, when he raised taxes on the very wealthy, the American people applauded. And really, after World War II, and you can Stuart Acuff, who did an introduction and his book, Getting America Back to Work, with Dr. Richard Levins, discusses that this is really the birth of the middle class the following decades after World War II, when there was a truce between capital and labor. And when, I mean, you know, you can make an argument that the passage of Taft-Hartley marked really a revival in the strike. But for the most part, you had job growth. You had relatively stable rates of unemployment. And you had relatively high unionization in America, which points to just a government that is not trying to backstop the very wealthy and the elite interests out there. And so that was very, very important, and we were not as polarized as we are. Certainly the 60s was a time of polarization, but, you know, for the most part, everybody agreed that Americans had the right to raise their family on one income and you know, live a middle class comfortable life. And now that's completely different because we are a highly polarized country, and that is, I would argue, in large part due to wealth and income consolidation. And once you have a society where so few people have so much and so many have so few, I liken it to a kindergarten class where one kindergarten child has all the toys and nobody has any toys. That's what type of society we live in now. You have a whole host of problems, and that's what we're seeing right now. That's what we have been seeing really over the last past 30-plus years with the election of Ronald Reagan. So, you know, that's why we have what we're seeing right now with Governor Christie. That's why we have a Republican Party that doesn't even extend unemployment benefits. Why would we expect them to extend unemployment benefits when they don't even want the government to run? They shut down the government, cost this country $20+ billion, right? And the moderate position now is just opening up the government, just not defaulting on our debt. So you could see how far off the charts we've gotten here. And, you know, in my opinion, it doesn't look like it's going to get any better. And so that's why we have Governor Christie. And that's why, you know, arguably Governor Christie, after this, is going to be politically viable within the Republican Party because he's nasty. Because he says, we're a welfare nation. Because he's just a political bully. And that's what the Tea Party, and that's what Republicans like. I'm telling you, folks, if you talk to people that watch Fox News, I have family members that are inundated with Fox News, okay? These people are the most angry, ignorant people you can imagine. These people always like to have a poster child to whip. You know, that they always like to blame things on this person, the other, the minority, or that person. They have such anger, and that is being, you know, given to them by the special interests out there that are benefiting off of stoking anger and stoking resentment and everything. And it's what we see on a daily basis. And you can't imagine how much influence, unfortunately, this network Fox News has. You know, they infect whatever their viewership is. You could bet that Fox News infects 10 or 20 times that amount of people, because those people that watch Fox News and are infected, they infect other people with, you know, misinformation, and those people infect, and it's like a virus. It just goes on and on and on. And we see this, unfortunately, with the corporate media, which is why I tell you, disregard the corporate media. It finds its way into corporate reporting, into, you know, news boardrooms, and so on and so forth. And it just goes all the way around. And the very wealthy and the special interests are benefiting all the way, because this type of talk, this type of, you know, paranoid libertarianism, you know, vitriolic comments about poor people and minorities and fill in the blank. The entire platform of the Republican Party is beneficial to them. It really is, because they win in the end. And so that's why we're seeing what we're seeing right now. It really is. You know, it's just really ridiculous. But we'll have to see what happens here. I personally have been talking about this for a long time. I really have. This is no surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. I've been saying this on this program. Others have been saying it, but we just don't have the platform that, you know, the other side has. And that's probably not going to change. Who knows? All right. We've got the Democrats now planning to make income inequality a major part of their platform in the lead up to the 2014 elections. All right, we're hearing now that the Democrats want to raise the minimum wage. Obama has called for the minimum wage to be raised to $10.10 an hour. Certain states in America have raised the minimum wage. I believe California raised the minimum wage to $10. It was some cities, maybe even Seattle, Washington, the minimum wage has been raised to $15 an hour. In Washington, D.C., it's expected to go up to $11.50 an hour during the course of a few years. And this supposedly is part of the Democratic platform, because we all understand that it polls very well. You know, this is why I say that we are a progressive country when it comes to, you know, economic issues. You poll Americans and ask them, do they support Social Security? Overwhelmingly, yes. And the Social Security benefits recipients love Social Security, and any tampering, any tinkering is a political nightmare, although I don't underestimate the special interests that seek to privatize Social Security. But nonetheless, it is almost a Franklin Roosevelt New Deal program, okay, that keeps people out of poverty. And if you want to throw Social Security into the anti-poverty programs, you can, because the poverty rate among seniors would be much, much higher without Social Security. And you know, seniors were eating cat food prior to, you know, the passage of the Wagner Act. People love Medicare, okay? Again, you can make an argument that Medicare is a single-payer program, okay? Everybody's that's working pays into the program, and you know, you can get Medicare when you're retired and so on. So, you know, unemployment insurance, people like unemployment insurance. They recognize that in order for us to live in a society where we have an semblance of a social safety net, we have to have unemployment. And unemployment is insurance. It's not, you know, welfare. It's not, it doesn't go to people that are undeserving, as the elites like to make it out to be. It goes to people that have paid into a system that's basically like an insurance policy. You pay in, and then when you need coverage, you get coverage. And you know, that's very popular among the American people. The minimum wage. Overwhelmingly, 70% of Americans support raising the minimum wage. The minimum wage hasn't been raised since 2007. These are progressive ideas, and the Democrats have decided to run on these ideas. But let me just tell you, and you know that I'm not a party guy, okay? The Democrats and the Obama administration have really accelerated income inequality. If you look at the income growth when President Obama has been president, where he's been president, how long he's been president, 95% of which has gone to the top 1%. That was last year. And that's Paul Street. You can go to Paul Street's website to see those statistics. So you've got 95% of the income growth going to the top 1% of income earners. You've got the stock market doubling since President Obama has been in office. Okay, you've got corporations sitting on top of trillions and trillions of dollars. You've got the Obama administration coming out and saying that he does not want to challenge the $165 million that went to the Wall Street executives right after the collapse. So he basically allowed these individuals to keep their, you know, ridiculous bonuses despite crashing the economy. Obama, you know, looted pension funds, union pension funds to pay for health care, in the auto bailout as well. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. But you get the point here is that whatever President Obama says and whatever a large majority of the Democrats say, it's irrelevant because you have to look at their deeds. You have to look at what they do. You know, and this is where this is what gets lost in the details. Is that while they're sounding progressive, they're doing the things that they may need to do to win elections, or saying the things that they need to say to win elections. When it comes to dealing, when it comes to actually making legislation, it's the special interests, the elite interests all the way, you know. And you could look at a variety of different issues. You could look at the issue of privatization. The Democrats and the Republicans are not that far on issues concerning privatization. President Obama at one point bragged about how, you know, there's been less regulation during his administration than was the Bush administration. The underlying assumption there is that regulation is bad. Regulation somehow stifles business, when in actuality you can make an argument that regulation, you know, creates businesses. Regulation creates consumers. As Robert Rice points out, the free market is just a bunch of rules. And so you could look at defense spending. Both parties agree on massive defense spending, which is at the point now where 50 cents of every federal tax dollar you spend is going to these defense contractors for producing absolutely no value for our country. There's no chance that a foreign invader is going to invade America, and yet we're spending half of our budget on defense spending. You could look at issues concerning unionization in America. President Obama claims to support unionization. He, in 2008, said he would run on, try to implement the Employee Free Choice Act, and yet he quickly dropped that. Okay, there's no push to increase the rate of unionization in America. And you know, this is even at a time where President Obama had majorities in the House and Senate. Taxes. You know, President Obama has actually talked about lowering the corporate tax rate. There's no mention of going back to the Reagan tax rates. There's no mention of the fact that, as I mentioned earlier, you've got one out of four multinational corporations paying next to nothing in taxes. You've got half of the taxes collected from corporations than was the case in the 1960s, going back maybe to 1961. And all of this has had a tremendous effect on our society, and yet it's not even mentioned. It's not even on the radar. It's not even a plan whatsoever. And that's where both parties are essentially the same. And so if you take all of these issues, if you take privatization, if you take a lack of support for organized labor, if you take the tax code, the corporate tax rate, and look at all of these issues, you'll see that there's very little difference between both political parties. And because that's the case, income inequality is going to soar no matter who is in the White House, because you have both parties that are factions of the business party. You've got one business party, two factions, the Republicans and the Democrats. They're both there to serve the interests of the elites. They'll do it differently. That's what they'll do. And you and I are not their priority. No matter what they say, no matter the nice campaign ads that they run, you and I are at the back of the line. As I've always said, America is a line, and we all line up in accordance with our income. If you've got billionaires, obviously they're going to be at the front of the line, and everybody else is basically going to be served in accordance with how much income they make. And that's unfortunate, and that's why, you know, you look at Congress. Now a majority of Congress are millionaires. You look at the legislation that is passed. If you poll a rich person, a businessman, and ask them, what type of laws, what do you want the government to do? And you go talk to a poor person and ask them, what do you want the government to do? You'll see that overwhelmingly the rich person gets his or her needs met by the government. And that's not by accident, folks. That is deliberate. That is part of our system. You know, Congress spends a lot of time fundraising, hearing the interests of the very wealthy. And they are inherently detached from our interests, just like everybody is. You know, a poor person is a poor person in America. Nobody knows what he's going through unless they're poor. And people in Congress and people on television and the top 1% of income earners, they are not in our position. Their goals are adversarial to our goals. We're adversarial to them, and they're adversarial to us. And so that's what we have in America right now. And, you know, the problems are clear. The statistics are clear. Everything is pretty cut and dry here. Everything I'm telling you is absolutely true. The question is, what do we do about it? And this is where it starts to get murky. This is where nobody really has an effective solution, at least not that I've seen. I mean, what do? Do we start our own party? You know, does America have a history of embracing third parties? How have third parties impacted political races? Do we try to infiltrate the closest political party to our needs and our desires? Do we boycott the election? Do we not consent to voting and not consent to our current system? Do we try to move past this current form of capitalism and try to embrace, you know, other forms of economics, like worker-owned cooperatives, something that is popular, your own means of production? How do we really get past this? Because, you know, we all agree that the system is completely broken. There's too much corruption, and you and I are getting left out in the cold. But the question is, what do we do about it? And honestly, I don't know the answer to that. And I don't know many people that do know the answer to that. It's very, very difficult. But one thing I know that we can't do is we can't continue to support the current system. And we can't continue to support the, you know, media model that exists in America. If we want things to change, we got to change our behavior. And that's why I keep on telling you, support independent media out there, not corporate-owned, not corporate-sponsored. Reject the corporate media. And by and large, I would reject both parties. I would focus my attention on, there are individuals like this councilwoman that was elected, I think Swama Tatani. I'm sure I'm probably butchering her name, but a socialist member of I think the Seattle Council, a woman who advocates all the things that we talk about here. A very, very smart lady from, I believe, India or Pakistan. But nonetheless, she's a teacher. And what she's done in Seattle is move the conversation, just like the Tea Party. Look at what the Tea Party has done over the past 5 years. They've completely moved the conversation to the point now where, again, the moderate position within the Republican Party is just keeping the government open. That's what the Tea Party has done. You know, they've gotten their way. Have we reinvested in jobs? Have we done anything to spur job creation? Have we done anything to close the corporate loopholes that are crippling our country? Have we done anything to increase the rate of unionization? No, we haven't done it. What have we done? What has President Obama done, conservative president? He's cut. He's cut and cut and cut to the point now where you have a federal budget deficit that is well under $1 trillion. We have spending that is discretionary spending that is at very, very low levels right now. We've just cut and cut and cut. It's been an austerity agenda, which really shows you that is, at the end of the day, that is what the elites want. They don't want any type of investment in our country. They don't want any type of government plan to spur job growth. They want austerity, austerity, austerity. Okay? And that's what we've seen. And so that's why you know that they've won. That's why you know that elections are nullified. The Tea Party and the special interests have nullified our elections. And so it's all completely meaningless. So, you know, the more I look at this, the more I say we have to really almost work outside the system for some sort of solution out there. Because I don't think you can work within the system. I really don't. And I don't know. Are we going to experience another great forgetting? You know, Tom Hartman, in his book, The Crash of 2016, writes about the great forgetting, about how, you know, when this country experiences real turmoil, they usually repeat itself. They usually repeat 80 years apart, because the last member of society that dies that remembers the Great Depression, when they die, then we're doomed to repeat ourselves again. And that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, I'll never forget the great crash of 2018. I'll never forget caused that. But how many Americans are like me? How many Americans are actually going to remember? And how many Americans actually pay attention to this stuff? Not many, folks. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. You're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
So many questions we have as we grow. It's hard to find answers to what we don't know. But sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life's lessons, help us to learn just what's important and what matters most. Much more than our teacher, and we call them coach. Right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand. To lead by example in words and in deeds, and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you, I'm proud to boast, I'm one of the many who's learned from the coast. To never surrender your hopes or your dreams.
take their toll.
They will raise us up.
Wisdom, courage, and kindness is how you measure a soul. The road that you travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chances you take. We raise our glasses and offer this toast to one who will always be known as the coach, to one who will always be known.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
That's me, Bob Carson. This is Carson's Corner, and I hope that you are not watching football out there. Okay, this is another way that the very wealthy manipulate us. This is another way that they control our economy, our societies, by putting football out there. And Noam Chomsky writes about how this is basically a way for them to manufacture consent, because while you're focusing on a meaningless football game, a meaningless sport event, which really has little effect on your life, and it's really amazing because, talk radio as an industry is kind of shrinking from what I've seen. The political talk in America has always been dominated by right-wing fascist forces. You have upward monopolies where companies like Clear Channel, which owns thousands of radio stations in America, owns syndication companies that syndicate nothing but right-wing talk radio hosts. And, it's our commons. It's our commons being used by, right-wing fascist forces to basically put out carefully crafted propaganda out there, which, as I mentioned earlier, infects millions and millions of people. And sports talk radio is really flourishing. I mean, it's dominant because there's a market out there for it. And it's unfortunate that people put so much thought and people put so much effort into analyzing sports, okay, when political issues are a million times more important. They actually impact people's lives. Nothing gets looked at. Nothing. People are kept in the dark. People are just not as interested in what's going on in the political theater as they are with NFL teams or Major League Baseball and so on and so forth. And the real unfortunate thing is that many of these sports team owners are siphoning the government for subsidies. This is basically part of the built-in corporate welfare system that we have in America, where sports team owners, 27 of which are on the Fortune 400 list, wealthy business owners who, in order to get to that level, in order to have, be a sports team owner and be presumably a billionaire, most likely you inherited a lot of money. You came from a wealthy, predominant family because opportunity is generational in America. Okay, there's just no question about that anymore. They have the same interests, and they have a tremendous amount of power in our society. And what these sports team owners do is they essentially get the taxpayers to subsidize their lifestyle by threatening to move to a new stadium or as in George Bush's case, lobbying and getting the citizens of Texas to approve a tax increase, which provided windfall profits to him that he's still receiving each day to build a new Texas stadium. And it's all part of the corporate welfare system billions of dollars each year goes towards subsidizing these sports team owners. You can look at a man like George Steinbrenner, who, you know, was a corporate welfare artist. He really was. You know, look at what went on in the building of the new Yankee Stadium and Rudy Giuliani's involvement. And you know, at the same time, the same state legislature turns around to the people and says that we don't have enough money for pensions. We don't have enough money to build roads and maintain them. We're broke, we're broke, we're broke. But when it comes to building a new sports team, oh, yeah, new sports stadium, we have all the money in the world. You see that, folks? We always find the money as long as it goes to the very wealthy and the politically connected. We always have the money, but people like you and I who don't have any money and no political power, well, guess what? There's no money out there. Pensions, you know, people like the city workers of Detroit who, you know, Detroit filed for bankruptcy and the Obama administration actually defended, according to Paul Street, defended the city's right to file bankruptcy and absolve itself of pension obligations. Well, those workers are going to be out of luck. Look, somebody that's worked for the city of Detroit for 30 years, they basically are out of luck because the city and the state has no money. And, you know, if you're not on Wall Street, if you're not part of the business community, you don't matter. Public servants don't matter. They're just inputs into the production process. They're just nuisances. They're a labor cost. They're unionized. They're a threat. They're one of the last countervailing institutions to corporate power out there. And so it's important that we renege on our obligations to them as far as their pensions, which is all worker contributed. You know, pension plans are paid by the workers. It's not subsidized by the taxpayers. As David K. Johnson points out pointed out in this program, that would be illegal. It's 100% worker contribution. We owe them this money. It's a deferred payment. It's really unfortunate. It really is. But, you know, this is where we're at right now in America, in this disgusting country. I'm sorry, it is. And you can say I hate America all you want to. That's fine. In certain areas, I do hate America. It's not as simple as wrapping yourself up in a flag. Okay? That's a very, very simplistic view of this country. It's not as simple as love it or leave it, which is some of the ignorant statements that you hear from people that watch Fox News and listen to that garbage out there. America really is a disgusting country on many levels. It really is. And speech like mine needs to get out to more people so we can encourage a real structural analysis of everything, you know. As Noam Chomsky says, if you want to learn how things work, you look at its structural institutions. You look at how it works. Who funds it? You know, where are the sources? Who has all these different aspects? Very, very important stuff. All right, I'm just about out of here. My name is Bob Carson. Please friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And make sure to follow me here on Blog Talk Radio, okay? blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Also, make sure to support thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. Visit their website at thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.